Many years ago, I was part of a series of retreats based on the work of Parker Palmer. And I learned many things, but perhaps the most important thing was a thing that had nothing to do with the actual purpose of the retreats. But it did have application in almost every area of teaching and preaching and leading. It was called the third thing. The idea is that whenever you want to introduce something to people and give them a chance to really think about it and do some introspection, you begin by offering them a third thing. The third thing provides a little buffer, a little space before things get too serious or too scary or too personal. The third thing can be a story or a poem, a piece of art, anything at all. So, for example, if I wanted you to think about your own life in terms of your relationship with Jesus, I wouldn't start by reminding you of all the things Jesus said about how to follow him and how to be a disciple, and then ask you to compare your faith walk to that. That can be just a little bit too much right off the bat. So what I might say is, I want you to consider, well, what I wouldn't say is, I want you to consider a time you may have betrayed your faith or not taken a stand for the marginalized or not spoken truth to power. I wouldn't go there first because then you're like backing away. That's too much. I wouldn't start by talking about Jesus, the first thing, and you, the second thing. I would start with a safe third thing. So I might offer you, for example, the story of Peter denying that he knew Jesus. And before I asked you to consider a time when you might have done what amounts to the same thing, I might need to use those words that Jesus said to Peter after Peter denied him. Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? Three times to show Peter, I think, I know you denied me three times, and I still love you, and you still love me. If I start that way, you have that safe space of Peter's forgiveness in which to consider your own actions, even if they may have been contrary to your faith in Jesus. So today, I want to introduce you to Ebenezer Scrooge, because he's the third thing, right? Jesus is the first thing. I mean, you get that. It's Advent, right? Jesus is the reason for the season, as they say. So Jesus is the first thing, and then there's us, and our lives in the context of what we believe about Jesus and how we act on those beliefs, we're the second thing. You are the second thing. Scrooge is the third thing. He's our buffer, that covetous old sinner. Before we delve into ourselves and all the ways we might be covetous old sinners, we can take a close look at Scrooge. Here in Dickens' own words, Scrooge. He was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone, Scrooge, a squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner, hard and sharp as flint from which no steel had ever struck out generous fire. Secret and self-contained and solitary as an oyster, the cold within him froze his old features, nipped his pointed nose, shriveled his cheek, stiffened his gait, made his eyes red, his thin lips blue, and he spoke out shrewdly and in a grating voice. A frosty rime was on his head and on his eyebrows and his wiry chin. He carried his own low temperature always about with him. He iced his own office in the dog days of summer and didn't thaw it out 1 degree at Christmas. He's a frozen one, Scrooge. Early on in the story, you know this. Early on in the story, his nephew comes into his offices to invite Scrooge to Christmas dinner, and it doesn't go well. And his nephew's a little nervous, but he doesn't give up. "Don't be cross, Uncle," said the nephew. "What else can I be," returned Scrooge, "when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas out upon Merry Christmas. What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older but not an hour richer?" "If I could work my will," Scrooge said, "every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart." That's rough. But if you think that's cold, you should hear what he says to the two men who come collecting for the poor for Christmas. You can think of these two gentlemen as sort of forerunners of the Salvation Army Red Kettle. "At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge," said the gentleman, "it's more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at this present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessities. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts, sir." To which Scrooge replies, "Are there no prisons?" "Plenty of prisons," said the gentleman. "And the union workhouses, are they still in operation?" "Well, they are. I wish I could say that they are not." "Oh," said Scrooge, "I was afraid from what you said at first that something had occurred to stop them in their useful course." Scrooge was concerned that there were no prisons or poorhouses. Well, the gentleman tries to regroup under the impression that they scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind or body to the multitude, returned the gentleman. "The poorhouses and the prison scarcely furnish Christian cheer to the multitude. And because of that, a few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. We choose this time because it is a time of all others when want is keenly felt. What should I put you down for?" "Nothing," said Scrooge. "You wish to remain anonymous." "I wish to be left alone," said Scrooge. "Since you ask me what I wish, that is my answer. I don't make myself merry at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments I have mentioned, the prison, the poorhouse. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there." "Many," said the gentleman, "can't go there. And many would rather die." "If they would rather die," said Scrooge, "they had better do it and decrease the surplus population." No doubt about it, Scrooge is a cold, mean, heartless miser. But don't worry, you know the story. He's about to get his comeuppance. He's about to meet the ghost of his 7 years dead partner, Jacob Marley. And the ghost appearance is heralded by bells. The ringing of the bells. Scrooge is home in his own sad little abode, and his glance happens to rest upon a bell, a disused bell that is hung in his room but not been rung. So it was with great astonishment and with a strange, inexplicable dread that as Scrooge looked, he saw this bell begin to swing. It swung so softly in the outset that it scarcely made a sound, but soon it rang out loudly, and so did every bell in the house. Now listen, if you forget the rest of the sermon, don't forget the bells. As the bells ring out, Marley, the ghost of Marley, the 7 years dead partner, comes through the door. And this is where the story really starts, with the ringing of the bells. From here on out, the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future will appear as the bells on the clocks and in the towers ring. In this Advent Christmas series, we're taking a look at how living in God's economy of grace and justice is the antithesis of life-threatening addiction to money and success and the exclusion of others while looking out only for ourselves. But God's economy, God's stock exchange, if you will, is the exact opposite of Scrooge's economy, of Scrooge's stock exchange. The chimes of the bells in Dickens' classic A Christmas Carol provide a wake-up call for Ebenezer Scrooge, and they turn him from his resentment, fear, and isolation. It's just like God's presence was born anew into this world, and we can be born anew too. Without the visits from the ghost, we can be woken up and redeemed into renewed life and joy and generosity and humility and love. We can be transformed. But now, here's where it gets interesting. If you've been paying attention to the descriptions of Scrooge, of the third thing, you've probably seen plenty of room for Scrooge's transformation, that covetous old sinner. But maybe not for yours. Because you're not Scrooge, are you? Oh, you might be a little Scroogish at times. But have you ever said everyone who celebrates Christmas should be boiled in his own pudding or had a stake of holly driven through his heart? Have you ever said those who are dying of hunger and other symptoms of poverty should hurry up and do it? Of course not. And that is why, despite this title of this series being The Redemption of Scrooge, Scrooge is not really the one we need to concern ourselves with today. He's too horrible. We're a little bit bad. He's terrible. We're moody sometimes. Scrooge gives us too big of a buffer. He's too safe of a space in which to consider our own lives. So no, not Scrooge. Marley is our third thing. The ghost of Marley. Now, I don't know about you, but I've always thought of them interchangeably, Scrooge and Marley, Marley and Scrooge. But let's take a closer look at Marley, at Marley's ghost who appeared with the ringing of the bells. Marley and his pigtails, usual waistcoat, tights and boots, drawing a chain that's clasped around his middle. It's long, Dickens says, and wrapped around him and behind him like a tail, and it was made of cash boxes, keys, padlocks, ledgers, deeds, and heavy purses wrought in steel. His body, though, was transparent, so that Scrooge, observing him, looked straight through his waistcoat and to the two buttons on his coat behind. I have always assumed that Marley was as horrible as Scrooge. But no, Dickens doesn't actually tell us that? The ghost of Marley starts to talk to Scrooge. Man of the worldly mind, do you believe in me or not? Do you believe what you see here or not? I do, said Scrooge, I must. But why do spirits walk the earth? And why do they come to me? It is required of everyone, the ghost returned, that the spirit within them should walk abroad among their fellow men and travel far and wide. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It's doomed to wander the world, and woe is me, witness what it cannot share, but might have shared on earth and turned to happiness. Well, you are fettered, though, said Scrooge. Tell me why. We know why, right? He took from the poor. He threw people out of their homes. He cared about nothing but making money. Same as Scrooge, right? No. I wear the chain I forged in life, replied the ghost. I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it on of my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you? And Scrooge can't understand. What do you mean? So the ghost explains. Ages of incessant labor by immortal creatures, for this earth must pass into eternity before the good of which it is susceptible is all developed. Not to know, Marley said, that any Christian spirit working kindly in its little sphere, whatever it may be, will find its mortal life too short for its vast means of usefulness. Not to know that no space of regret can make amends for one's life's opportunity misused. Did Marley do the same things as Scrooge? Doesn't say he did. What is Marley's sin? Why is Marley carrying the chains to make amends for one's life's opportunities missed? Not horribleness, but opportunities missed. Scrooge still doesn't get it. You were a good man of business, Jacob. Business, cried the ghost. Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, and benevolence were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. And then the ghost holds up the chains, which I've always assumed were earned the same way that Scrooge's were. Holds up the chains and says, at this time of the rolling year, I suffer most. Listen to this very carefully. Why did I walk through crowds of fellow beings with my eyes turned down and never raise them to that blessed star which led the wise men to a poorer abode? Were there no poor homes to which its light would have conducted me? For Marley, who wanders the earth in death, trying to make amends for what he did in life, what he did in life to earn those chains, was simply not to pay attention, not to look for opportunities to do some good, not to look for opportunities to introduce peace, not to provide a little food for the hungry, not to offer a word of encouragement to the poor in spirit. Friends, when you consider yourself, do not compare yourself to Scrooge. He's too easy a mark. Consider your life alongside Marley. Pay attention to your own opportunities to do good.